And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba in the Bloom, episode 291, your 2025 starting pitching review part due. Part two coming your way. We did ADPs 1 through 40 off the board for pitching, not ADP 1, the top 40 pitchers off the board in 2025. Reviewed those on Thursday evening for your Friday morning listening pleasure. Tonight we're going 41 through 80. Things are going to get a lot more murky. And we'll see where it goes from there. But it's kind of like Christmas Eve right now, Ryan. Like where our heads probably aren't in the right spot as it is. We're gonna knock this one out of the park, but we're a little motivated for something else at the moment.
Which knocking out of the park, if we're doing a pitcher episode, is probably not the right metaphor. But I'll let it slide.
Let me see.
Bailey Ober was discussed previously, but
last show.
But Taj Bradley is on the show. So knocking it out of the park is probably fair there. No, Christmas Eve's a good parallel. Cannot wait to get down to Arizona. It's funny, man. First pitch week is always like you wait all year for it to come, and then Monday morning hits and you're like, holy crap, I've got 8 million freaking things to do before we get down there. And at least I've probably crossed off maybe 4 million. You may be a little less given other things going on in your world this week, but all will be well once we're airborne on Wednesday. Can't wait to see you. Can't wait to see all the listeners out there. There's a lot of excitement in the Discord, the Patreon. Shortly, probably before this episode airs, we will post our location for the Bubba in the Bloom meetup at First Pitch for folks that are going during the Home Run Derby. And then, yeah, man, golf, like, I don't know. Once we get there, it'll be fun, but the lead up to it is both exciting, but also like a lot of crap to do. I have not packed. I've done laundry, at least. I have not packed at all.
There you go.
We'll see.
Yeah. If I'm ready to roll, I do have to pack, and I'm staring at the corner of my office that's going to get loaded into a suitcase. So I'm looking forward to that.
But, well, with like trinkets and like all this stuff you ordered.
Yep. I have an issue, but, I have been, you know, Ryan's the brains of the operation. I'm the branding person, so promotion. So that's what I'm doing over here. And we'll see how good of an idea this is. But that'll be coming to FPAS. And if it goes well, we'll have to get some for Vegas and maybe some other listeners that couldn't make it. We'll see how that plans out for the future. But a lot of fun stuff. We're looking forward. I know you guys probably like, God, you guys talk about it all the time. Well, because it's that cool. Like, it really is. It's a great time. And we book it months in advance for a reason, and quite excited about it. I'm really looking forward to getting the heck out of this area for a few days. So, yeah, really, really excited about all of that. But with that being said, there will be no show Thursday evening because we will be in Arizona. We'll be recording a live show on Friday, so you can watch it on the Baseball HQ YouTube channel. It'll be getting streamed for you. Ryan can fill in the blanks there, but I will probably get the file probably Saturday at some point. The second I get it, I'll splice in the audio and stuff and the openings, and I'll post it to your listening platform. So sometime Saturday, I'd imagine it'll be on a podcast platform for you.
Perfect. Yeah, the stream itself will be streamed from the Baseball HQ account, and that goes for all First Pitch Arizona episodes. So not just ours, but it's a pretty cool, you know, if you can't make it to First Pitch, it's kind of a cool way. I think there's probably 8 or 10 different podcasts throughout the weekend, and they will all be live streamed from the Baseball HQ YouTube page and archive, so you can check those out later. So we won't have our typical stream with our background or whatever here for our show, but we'll have the audio. Non-FPAS news, ADP and Steamer came out today. I did not have a chance, unfortunately, to dive into that stuff, but that's, I know the Discord was excited about that, and I actually have my to-do list post First Pitch is almost as big as my pre First Pitch to-do list, so I'm going to start building out the 2026 draft season tools. I need ADP and projections to start to do that, and those happen today. So be building that out for the Patreon folks once we get back from Arizona as well.
Yeah, with I haven't been able to check any of it out, so I'm looking forward to doing that once we get out of this, get to Arizona. Looking forward to that. But the one name that I saw pop up in the Discord today was from Lucas Beery, and he says, what are we thinking of the Steamer projection on Aaron Nola? a 3.99 ERA, 1.22 WHIP, and an 8.7% K to nine. And my first answer was pretty generous. So
generous. It's pretty spot on, I would say.
Yeah, I don't know what spot on world you're living in, but sure. No, it's probably not that far off based on what he's done in recent years. Just how many innings pitched is probably the better question. But I did want to shout out another thing before we start talking more pitchers here is you mentioned ADP. You've already come out with a new tool for 2026 over the last couple of days. I don't know if you want to, pub that out there or not.
Yeah, I've got a draft tracker or ADP tracker tool for that. I'll build it out after we get there. But I got some good plans for that, and not just min max ADP, but actually the last X number of drafts where each player was actually taken in each draft, and especially drafts that are still in progress, because I know some of these drafting holds can take a few weeks to go. So we'll work on building that out after we get back. But excited about the possibilities with that one. So. That'll be good. We also posted a shout out Burks. Yeah. Did some recon. Did some Uncle Ted recon. We haven't seen Uncle Ted in the chat here lately, so I don't know. I don't know what our guy's up to. But Burks put together a pretty in-depth list of all of Uncle Ted's preseason and in-season predictions that were called for on our live stream throughout the season. And Burks gave a hit, miss, or push, and then his commentary for almost 40 of Uncle Ted's calls. So those are up on the results are up on the Patreon for folks who want to check that out. It's pretty freaking hilarious, if you ask me. And all in good fun.
I think it got the most comments on any post period.
Yeah, I think it's
half hour.
I think it's already beaten like anything you or me would put up there. So
yeah.
It's a low bar, but. He's
thank you, Uncle Ted, for your comedic relief.
We miss you.
No,
somewhat.
No. Yeah, don't speak for me on this one, partner. I got the itchy trigger finger when I see him start showing up in here. But all right, let's get to it. Enough goofing off. Let's get to it. We're talking pitchers 41 through 80, starting at ADP 145. Ryan, before we get going, explain to the listeners what we're looking at here. And honestly, there's more green than I expected.
Somewhat. We'll chat about that. But yeah, this is starting pitcher ADP 41 through 80. Again, this is looking back. So this is of the previous season. So similar formula. We've got the ADP, what they were, where they finished at the position among starting pitchers in 2025 per the Fangraphs player rater, and then ERA, WHIP, and strikeouts all color coded. To me, this was pretty rough. Man, by my naked eye, I count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of this group of 40 that finished in the top 40 at the position. So that's pretty tough. And even on the right side of our screen, again, this is for the YouTube crowd, but the right side of our screen is starting pitcher ADP 61 through 80. Out of those 20 players, only one finished in the top 40, and that was Chris Bubich, who got injured halfway through the season. So it's for me, my biggest takeaway, and again, we'll talk about individual players kind of as we go, but is like there's this thought out there that, and I mean, I've heard, and it's, pitchers get hurt, I'm going to wait on starting pitching. Well, if you look at the returns on if you waited on starting pitching, at least within this group through 41 through 80, it was really bad. So I don't think the response to and it is a truism out there that starting pitchers can get hurt at any time and your season can go up in dust. I don't really think that equates to I'm going to fade starting pitching and get starting pitching later, in quotes, as the narrative goes, because just looking at this group, especially 41 through 60, and we'll talk about some breakouts at the end of the show that absolutely happened. Like waiting on starting pitching is just as risky, I think, as going heavy early starting pitching.
Yeah, and the risk reward's much different as well. When the early starting pitching, the reward could be a lot better if you go heavy on it. Even if you wait and sure your guy doesn't get hurt, is he really crushing things for you? Probably not, most of them, because even like you talked about these guys that finished really well, let's just say after the top 50 at the position, it gets like, or like, it's just because a chunk of what you're referring to is just in 41 through 45 were quality arms in your initial statement about like eight guys, the top 40, whatever it was. So yeah, majority of them after like the top 55, it got real bad. So after ADP 200, basically, pitching was a disaster, like an absolute landfill. And if you're talking 15 teams, 200 picks, like you're in what, round 14, 15, maybe?
It's not that, it's not that late in the draft, right? It's not the, like, these are picks that you are depending on to, especially in 15 teamers, to come through for you. And yeah, I mean, there's always spots where it worked, but they were few and far between.
Very few and far between. And I just looking at it going, thank God I wasn't heavily invested in a lot of these back end ones, even, which is crazy for someone that likes to wait. It's because I would pound it once I waited, and that's what made me feel a little better about life, I think. But yeah, because even some of these guys, we'll talk before I completely bury this, but like the Fots, the Gores, some of these guys started out really good and then it disappeared. So I kind of got mixed bags on that as well. Any final thoughts from the macro level before we start talking individual players?
No, yeah. I mean, even the guys that did well, your Nate Eovaldi, I mean, we'll talk about him, but got hurt. Like Brandon Woodruff was finished number 42 at the position, according to Fangraphs. But like, how long did you wait out for that? Chris Bubich, as I mentioned earlier, finished 33rd. He was the one guy from 61 to 80 finished in the top 40. You got hurt, you know, 4.5 months out of him. So, yeah, I just I don't know. Don't want to keep driving home the same point, but it's a rough look as we get later in the show.
Very, very rough look. So let's get going to it here before we do beat that dead horse. ADP 41 through 45. They are off the board 41 through 45. Gavin Williams finished 29th at the position. Kodai Senga, 64th. Kevin Gausman, 22nd. Clay Holmes, 61. You say, we say, y'all say Kikuchi, 150, which 150 is just crazy. That whip must have just blasted his player rater because outside of the whip, pretty good. Whip destroys you, yes. But to me, the first thing that stands out, and then I'll give you your picks here, Holmes and Senga, 61 and 64, two guys that on every Bloom board it seems we ever watched were overachieving the entire time. And here they are finishing 61st and 64th, which below what you drafted them for, but in reality, with the rest of this board, didn't kill you.
Right. Didn't kill you, especially in, you know, for Senga, it kind of, and well, really both of them and Holmes, it all depends kind of when you decided to cut bait. Like for Senga, it was in the first half, according to the kind of the first 3 months of the season, it was a 147 ERA in the first half, 590 in the second half. That was only over 9 starts for Senga, but that included a demotion to AAA. I don't have Holmes' splits in front of me, but it feel like it was probably not quite as drastic, but probably not too far off either, because we were beating the Clay Holmes' dying drum for much of the second half because the skills were just way off. So all kind of depends when you look back, like how quickly did you start benching those guys? How quickly did you cut bait? I personally, I mean, out of this five, I wanted to talk Kikuchi just because he was probably my most rostered pitcher, at least before the Angels signed Yusei Kikuchi. And yeah, I don't know, man, 150 on the player rater seems a little rough at the position. Like, cause I mean, like you said, it was a 399 ERA. It was a bunch of K's, but a 142 whip does kind of kill you. And for Kikuchi, like it's funny. We don't want to kind of bag on teams and team context too much, but like the second Kikuchi signed with the Angels, it's like everyone is collectively out on him and the skills took a major fall. I mean, K rate dropped from 28% in 24 down to 22.5, swing strike down from 13 to 10. Those are pretty big drops, especially in the strikeout and whiffs department for Kikuchi. So that for me personally, that was a big target of mine and someone that I feel like worked out better than 150, but still at the end of the day, wasn't that great. When you look at the whip.
Yeah. The 150 surprised me. I think was a clue by my voice when I said it, like, whoa, that's a big standout there. Cause I had a lot of Kikuchi as well. I was with you on that one. The one I want to talk about is Gavin Williams, a player that I've always been kind of optimistic on. And it felt like he was having a really rough season to some, just if you like watch the buzz or listen to the buzz, whatever. Finished 29th at the position, 41st pitcher off the board, 306 ERA, 127 whip, 173 in the strikeout department. Whip was a big factor, but Gavin Williams, like, kind of, I did an article on the Patreon trying to talk, kind of talking first half, second half yep. with some of these guys, and Williams was a big one here. First half, 3.7 ERA, 2.18 ERA in the second half of the season. And when we're talking with the whip on Gavin Williams, 1.43 in the first half, 1.05 in the second half. He lowered his walk rate from 13.5 to 9.2. I also increased his strike rate by 5%. So he had 9% K to walk in the first half, 18.4% in the second half. Like, he showed marked improvements, which was really, really good to see with Gavin Williams because he still has a pretty young arm. And the ground ball rate also jumped from 41.9 to 48.9 in the second half of the season. So a lot more in the ground ball department. The strikeouts were much better. The walks were much better. Now there's still people that'll question things. He is 26. Like, you know, is he a location guy? Is his stuff this nasty? Is this just another, like, you know, this is Bieber, this is Bybee, this is what the Guardians do type situation. I think he's at worst in that situation, maybe better than that. We'll see. But the improvements we saw from first half to second half, I think, are very positive going into this year. And a guy we do have a listener question on later as well. But I love what we saw in the second half, and very intrigued for 2026.
All right. I'm less so. I'm sure we will talk a bunch of Gavin Williams at first pitch. Maybe I'll be persuaded, but I'm a little less so. But we'll see.
Gotcha.
For me, it's all the right. control, the walks. It's got to get over that hump.
It is. 46 through 50 pitchers off the board here. Ryan Pepio finished 44th in the position. Brandon Pfaadt finished 190. I would have thought that was like, I did think it was better than I did a draft and looked at his profile. I'm like, could he not better?
Yeah.
Taj Bradley 202. He stinks. Mackenzie Gore 127. I mean, we know that saga. And Seth Lugo 109. Another rough year. So this is where things start to get a little bumpy for a bit. What do you want to discuss here? Because Pepio is a guy I've already invested at least one share, if not two, on draft season.
Yeah, Pepio, obviously, of this group was the big winner. And by big winner, at least just return even value, which at starting pitcher, like, that's really good. Because you always, I mean, starting pitcher breakouts are always going to happen. There's going to be fab guys that pop up. So if you return equal value where you drafted a starting pitcher, that's generally what you want to do. For me, the biggest surprise of this group, and I wasn't really on Taj Bradley. I will let you talk about your boy next. But I wasn't huge on Taj Bradley, but I did not expect a 5.05 ERA, 131 whip. Demotion to AAA in the second half. Traded to the Twins. That didn't really work. Like, the whiffs fell off hard for Taj Bradley. That wasn't great. In a season where you would expect some major growth, age 24 season, it was a pretty big step back. And I had reviewed Bradley's forecaster box like 2 days ago, and it's not great, man. Like, there are not many good signs of Taj Bradley turning this around. So disappointing. Even though I didn't have a ton of Bradley, I know, you know, he's a pretty popular guy, and this was a major step back.
Yeah, I was hoping the Twins would help a little bit, but then you look at the Bailey Ober situation, they have done jack to fix that. We'll talk about him on Saturday. Yeah. But like, Pablo Lopez, pretty good. So Joe Ryan, pretty good. Maybe I wouldn't completely cross Bradley off the list just yet, but I'm not interested in getting heavily invested in Taj Bradley. But just remember, like, the Twins thing was only for a couple months, so it wasn't like it was a full. We got to work in the system. Now they have a new manager. They're gonna have a
whole. Well, they've got the Pirates' old manager now, so they should be good to go. Yeah.
All right. My boy, you're talking Mackenzie Gore, I'm assuming.
Yeah. What's your take on Mackenzie Gore? He did finally, I will give you some credit, team whip. Mackenzie Gore finally posted his first sub 140 whip. So kudos there, coming in at 135. Did have a ton of Ks at 185 strikeouts, but another disappointing second half fade for Mackenzie Gore.
That's the biggest thing. It's the second half fade once again. Like, been well documented, but you look at Mackenzie Gore, just filthy first half with Gore, 302 ERA, which you'd love at this ADP, 675 in the second half. It was, you know, his best ERA in the second half was in September, 438. It's just horrible is what it was. But even worse, you look at like there were people talking about the strikeouts he was doing, as you mentioned. First half, 22.7% K to walk, he had a 30.5% carry and a 7.7% walk. Like we were seeing a 1-2 whip in the first half. Like, yes, we're doing this. Second half, 20.7% K, almost a 10% drop in K, 12.8% walk, so a 5% increase in walk and a 1.7 whip. So things went off the rails in the second half for another season for Mackenzie Gore. And that's what makes it very tricky to even try to figure out what's going on with Gore. He got more ground balls in the second half, which is surprising when you start breaking it down. He also had he had fewer fly balls, but his home run to fly ball went up 7%. So he's a guy that I need to look at even more probably to figure out what exactly is going on with the second half drop off for another, like with the second or third straight season, is mind boggling for a guy that looked like the dude myself and others have wanted for so long in the first half of the season and just completely disappeared.
Yeah. And like you said, I think that's now a trend, and that's not great. I mean, yeah, you can look at the ground ball, the homer to fly, whatever, but at the end of the day, like this, those differences in strikeout and walk rate are between the first and second half. I mean, it doesn't really matter what else you do. Like that's real bad.
Real, real bad. All right. Let's talk 51 to 55 pitchers off the board. Nate, the GOAT. Evaldi finished ninth at the position, the best pitcher on this board. Zach Eflin finished 212th at the position. And then we have Jesus Luzardo, 28th, Nick Lodolo, 26th, and Drew Rasmussen, 18th. So this was a pocket, ADP 190 to 208, an 18-pick spread here where you can make some hay if you just happen to get lucky in your waiting game.
Yeah, do need to thank Nate the Great for his service, man. It's wild to see those ratios on this board, like how Oregon Duck Green those things are with a 173 ERA, 0.85. Like that helps you so much. And it was 130 innings of those ratios, which, you know, 10 years ago, you think 130 innings, not that much. 130 innings in today's game isn't, you know, yeah, you want more. You want 160, 170, 180, but 130 will certainly play. Hell of a season for Nate Evaldi, obviously over his head in terms of the rate. Like nobody holds a 173 ERA, nobody holds a 0.8 whip. There's obviously some luck involved there. That just the fascinating thing for me with Evaldi was like there was no sign. It was how he ended the season, right? Strained rotator cuff, like not great, but like there was no sign of injury with Evaldi. I mean, the second half, Evaldi had a 156 ERA over 57 innings. Strikeout to walk was just as good. Missed tons of bats, through strikes. Like, there was no sign of this injury. And then all of a sudden, it was just like, yeah, Evaldi hurt his shoulder and he's out for the year. And I don't think surgery was involved. So going to be very tough call for me for next season for Nate Evaldi. But I don't know. It was obviously tough when you had to cut him in 2025. But like the amount that he helped your pitching staff was so much that paid off huge for me.
Yep, that was tremendous. So we'll see how that pans out as draft seasons get rocking and rolling. I think I already have a share in the meatballs, if I remember correctly. So got that going for me. yeah, he got hurt like 2 days later. So yeah, that was good. Good stuff.
Yeah, I was going to ask, like,
shortly thereafter.
You're right. Yeah, he pitched one start after that.
Yep. Shortly thereafter.
Wait, which aligns with the rest of your rotation there with Wheeler. And don't you have somebody else who's messed up?
It was Trevor McGill, closer for the Brewers. Yeah. It's good stuff. Good.
You have Darvish on that team or?
No, Ryan Pepio is my ace, I believe. So, yeah. Or Trevor Rogers. We'll talk about him later, actually. That could be my ace. All right. For me, I got to talk about Jesus Lizard, Jesus Luzardo, a guy that I was very, very heavy on this draft season. And it was more so just taking a chance on skills at a draft price. Because as anybody can see, like, I don't think we expected it to be this bad, but you start looking at the names we're about to talk about, like, okay, there's not a ton of upside coming up here. Like, there's a lot of guys you could see being, you know, 50-50 good and bad starts, but not a lot of upside, where Lizardo's like not that far off of a big year. Coming back from injuries is more like how many innings is he going to throw All right, finished with a 3.92 ERA, 1.22 WHIP, 216 Ks. That was a big one right there. The strikeouts, again, a thing I tried to focus on heavily this season. And then it started out phenomenal. Like, looked like he's going to be the Cy Young. Gives up 12 runs and 8 runs and back-to-back starts in like 4 innings max, maybe 3 innings. It's destroyed. Everyone's thinking, okay, what are we doing here? I wanted to pull up his stats since those 20 runs he allowed. On June 11th, he returned from giving up the 20, made 19 more starts this season. He had a 3.57 ERA, which I think is obviously very good, to go along with a 3.25 Sierra, which is promising. He had 133 Ks in 111 innings. He had a 22.5% K to walk with a 1.07 WHIP. I know we can't erase 2 starts. We talk about this all the time, Ryan. But Jesus Cesaro figured it out again, pitched phenomenally after those 2 rough starts. So we see the 3.92 and all that stuff and like and the 1.22 WHIP. Like, yeah, it's still pretty good. Good stuff. He was even better than that before and after those 2 starts. Like, he was very, very good in the season. And again, you have to take all the stats. I get it. But there was a couple starts. I remember he gave up like 4 runs in the first. Like, what's he doing? And he still pitched 7 innings. And shut him down and strike out 11. Like, he battled and he was a beast. And I will be – it's one of those when we talk more in previews, it's like, okay, big innings jump. How do we feel going into next year? But if we're talking 2025 like we are tonight, Lizardo was nails for where we took him, at least in my mind, like almost a 280p. Love what we got from Jesus Lizardo.
It is funny how those 2 starts like dominate the theme of Lizardo's season when he did finish in the top 30. And those 216 strikeouts, man, by far the most on this entire sheet. No one else cleared 190. I think Gausman had 189. So huge advantage there. Big, big jump forward for Lizardo despite those 2 rough outings. Quick shout out to my guy, to Nick Lodolo, who was in this group. Finished 26th ahead of Lizardo, but just super great ratios. Dealt with injuries again. I would love to see a full season out of Nick Lodolo, but I will certainly be back in again next season because I think skills wise, this dude is like a top 15 pitcher. I think he's that good. He needs to stay healthy, throw a full inning or full, season of innings, and he'll get there. But great season for Lodolo, finishing 26th when picked 54th at starting pitcher.
And then I don't have a whole lot more to say, but Drew Rasmussen, just awesome this year. He struggled going deep into games, but threw 150 innings on the season. And what I wanted to highlight is we'll talk about it a lot this preseason. His home road splits weren't that dramatic. That's the crazy part. 2.71 ERA at home, 2.83 on the road. Gave up 12 homers at home and 6 on the road. But just wanted to highlight that. Like, a lot of these guys we'll talk about, the Bosses, they had massive splits with that ballpark in Tampa. Rasmussen didn't. It was more just like he wasn't a heavy, heavy strikeout guy. So it's kind of a blah profile, but his ratios were like he had so many just awesome, awesome starts. So just got to keep in mind, it's just you want to pay a certain price for no strikeouts is the question.
And just another example for me, at least, of, I don't trust this guy's health. I don't trust his innings. He's thrown 44 innings, 28 innings in each of the previous 2 seasons entering 2025. And then boom, Drew Rasmussen spikes 150 innings. It's like, I don't know, man. These examples keep popping up of like, why do I try and predict starting pitcher health?
We have a like, question on that later.
So. Why?
Definitely involved. All right, let's finish up the left side of the board here. The 56th through 60th pitchers off the board, ADP 209 to 223. Reese Olson finished 85th at the position. Shane Baz finished 138. Walker Buehler finished 225 on 2 teams. Grant Holmes was pitching well until he got hurt, 121. And then Jackson Jobe, who really never figured it out, at 149. So some very optimistic plays in this range that just did not pan out at all.
Yeah, tough range. I mean, out of this group, Reese Olson probably had, well, maybe Shane Baz could stay claim to this too, but Reese Olson had a pretty, like, I would say, like, enticing season, which obviously ended on the IL with a shoulder strain, which you don't like to see. But Reese Olson, I thought, he was a big target of mine, so I'm biased, but he was missing bats, getting some Ks, but thought he was doing pretty well. It just didn't work out at the end. Grant Holmes was I know a big favorite of both of ours, and yes. That didn't last either. So I don't know, man. Just a rough rough group. Shane Boz was good, though, I feel like.
I want to bring up Shane Boz because he was a part of that article I read on Patreon as well, that a couple things stood out when I dug in on Shane Boz. First off, the first half, second half. Second half is rough. 4.17 ERA in the first half, 6.23 in the second half. Got smacked around a bit in that regard. If you want some other numbers, his whip was 1.25 in the first half, 1.49 in the second half. K to walk improved a bit, but his walks also went up with the strikeouts going up in the second half. But what also stood out when I was looking at first half, second half numbers for the most part, but I kind of mentioned it with Rasmussen. Boz got torched in the Tampa Bay, the Steinbrenner Field. 5.9 ERA with 18 home runs over 82 innings pitched. We're in 84 road innings, 3.86 ERA, 8 home runs. So quite the difference in results there. Going back to the trop, like, do we see the splits drop back down? And then now you're thinking, okay, this is more of a legit thing. Because the strikeouts, like I said, improved, actually, in the second half, which is kind of what you want to see. But he was given up. He was cursed by the long ball in that ballpark, not to mention just a second half kind of fade, which I kind of wasn't that surprised for a guy coming off the innings. This is where the opposite things, the innings limits with Boz. And so he's one that, digging in on hit the home road splits in the first half, second half, I'm like, huh, this could be interesting for 2026. I'm not alone on that, though.
You are not alone. Boz for next year, I think, is – there was some very impressive skills growth going on under the surface. So I like Boz for next year, but it was off him for 2025. And again, another example, innings guy, like major league innings leading up to 2025 by season 13, 27, 0, 79, and then 166.
160. That's quite the jump. Quite the jump on that one. All right, let's go to 61 through 65, ADP 233, the 246. So smaller pockets here. And whoof. Tanner Houck finished 253. Like,
you want to talk some uncooked? What, you cook some tri-tip tonight you put in the Discord?
Yeah, mine was medium rare. Tanner Houck was mooing. Like, Tanner Houck, sure. Tanner Houck looked like the smoke rings. That's a rough go for it right there. Jose Barrios, 107, and he missed like the last few starts. Max Scherzer, 147. Jeffrey Springs, 64th. He's the best in this pocket. And Bowden Francis, like, we were all out on it. You and I were definitely out on Bowden Francis, but a lot of people weren't. And they were by like the first month of the season.
Yeah, I don't really have much on this entire group.
No.
Just because, I mean, this is freaking ugly. I'd rather be like optimistic going into first pitch and not so negative on this crowd, but
Tanner Houck was that one. Tanner Houck's the one they left him. They hung him out to dry a couple times.
Yeah, he was the sacrificial lamb. That was in Tampa, I think, early in the season. Was that, I want to say 11 runs or 14? I think 11 runs. 14.
I think he set the record. I think we said, like, oh, because when Lazard allowed 12 runs, no one's going to allow more than 12 again. It wasn't that far after. It was before. He had 2 11 earned run outings.
Yeah, he gave up 11, but he did it twice.
Oh, 4 2/3 innings, 22 earned runs with 5 walks and 1. He only gave up 4 home runs over those 22 earned runs. It's pretty impressive.
Sure. If you want to paint it that way, that's a true fact.
Yeah. He was really, he was pretty solid though outside of that. The seven other starts.
Yeah.
Seven other starts, he allowed 17 earned runs.
Yeah.
Over like 39 innings.
Oh, man. Anybody else here? Springs finished the best. Springs to me was a blind spot.
I was going to bring Springs up because he had a stretch in the season where he was quite streamable, where he even finished the season pretty strong. Like, he gave up 5 earned runs against Boston on the 9th of September, but it was 1 earned against Houston, none earned at Boston, 2 earned at St. Louis, 3 against Texas, 1 earned. He had overall, even like July on, all but 3 starts, he'll have 4 earned runs or 3 earned runs or less. Like, he had his moments where he was pretty solid in the second half of the season. So he's another one of those guys. He got hurt by the home ballpark. He was a home run guy anyways, but he got hurt by the home ballpark, and the second half swoon was a little worse. Yeah, he was at least a streamable arm, is the way I'll say it. He's at least streamable throughout the season.
Yeah, for Springs, it was a 14% homer to fly at home. League average is 12, so got hurt a little bit. A 41 ERA at home, where on the road it was a 3.45 ERA. On the road, it was a, let's see here, 10% homer to fly. So definitely got burnt by the home park. Problem is, unlike Tampa, home park isn't going anywhere.
Yep, that's a big, big problem there. All right, let's move on to better. Never mind, it's not better. 66 through 70, ADP 248 to 271. At least this is a bigger gap here. Brandon Woodruff finished 42nd, which you mentioned earlier is surprising considering he missed at least the first half of the season. So that shows you how good he was when he did come back. Dustin May finished 200th. Wow, was that a bad one? Sean Manaea 159. Ronel Blanco 108. Somehow was one of the best ones here. And then Verlander at 136, because he really got the, like, if he had more wins, he probably was a top 100 pitcher, honestly. Like, he actually pitched a 385 and a 136 whip at this ADP. When you look at everything else around it, really not that bad.
Yeah, not that bad. I don't know. Blanco only threw 48 innings. I'm not sure how
I want nothing to do with him. I didn't like him last year either.
Yeah, I did. I liked Blanco, actually. I thought the. He still missed a ton of bats, almost 15% swinging strike. Like, I think the strikeouts could be there, but yeah, didn't matter. 48 innings for Blanco, not great. And even like, I mean, there were two long rehab waits in this group with Brandon Woodruff and Sean Manaea, like seemed to be never ending. I mean, Woodruff, I feel like some people were drafted, at least early in draft season, were drafting Woodruff like he would start in April, and then it was like he's going to miss the first month, and then Brandon Woodruff did not even make his debut until July 6th. So I don't even know. And we leagues where you don't have an IL.
Like a line drive off his shin.
Yeah, he was like, that's right. He was like cursed.
Yeah, he was supposed to come back probably like in May, just off the top of my head, and it got pushed back quite a bit.
So he probably was kept in a bunch of non-IL leagues just because like it wasn't really setbacks. It was
always the last start before his return. Like, he gets this goofy injury.
Yeah. But he did make up for it. I mean, if you held on to Woodruff in that second half, 320 ERA, 0.9 whip. That's great, though. I think the more frustrating rehab was Sean Manaea. It's like,
very much so.
Dude just chilled on the IL for overstayed his stay. I will just.
He got the reverse piggyback, and the rest is history.
Highlight of the show for 2025: the reverse piggyback with Clay Holmes. We didn't mention that with Clay Holmes earlier, but no, congratulations to Sean Manaea and his new child in 2025.
His wife and their new child, yes. But yeah, 60 total innings pitched. Like, what are we doing here? Like, the strikeouts were still good, but like when he pitched, it was good, but he only pitched like 4 innings a lot of the time, which is really frustrating.
I mean, it was still that was 5.64 ERA. Like,
I guess, I mean, it was great. I mean, it's later, I guess, when he got his usage, because his last like 4 outings were really good, but it was 5 innings, 3 innings, 1 1/2 innings.
Yeah,
there was a section there where he was allowing 4 to 5 runs, like 4, oh, wow, like 6 of his 7 starts in a row. That's rough. That's not going to, literally, he never went 6 innings in any start the entire season.
Yeah. No, totally brutal. And for as good as Sean Manaea was in the second half of 2024, this was the complete opposite. Like, Sean Manaea, we forget, like, he helped a bunch of teams out on the stretch the previous season, and it was just the opposite in 25. What about your guy? What about JV? I feel like 136 on the player right there. That's a little tough. Didn't win many games, which...
That's what cost him. The wins
thanks,
cost him.
Thanks, Giants.
And trust me, his baby back bitch brother let us know about it every time he went out there. So, you don't have to worry about that.
Dude had 4 wins.
And they're all in the second half. I'm going to look to double check. I'm 99% sure they're in the second half of the season. Because it was a run of bad luck early on. Like, he just couldn't get a win. He actually had a worse ERA in the second half, which is funny. If you think about it,
he was like 0-10.
Yeah. Well, it's weird too, because, like, okay, so he had a 4.7 ERA in March, April, then 3.8 in May. Okay. But June, a 4.02, July, a 5.4. That's what I wanted him, just gone. But then in August, a 3.62, and in September, a 2.08. He finished real strong down the stretch, which kind of gave me some blind optimism. Like, he hit a 2.99 ERA in the second half. That's pretty dang good for a guy that's one of the only players in baseball older than me. So that give him his props on that one.
I mean, skills wise, still like 14% K to walk. That's doable, especially. I mean, I don't know if he comes back to San Francisco, but in that park, that can work. But yeah, I think 16 or 17 starts before his first win in late July.
Yeah, I'd be interested in a reunion because he got his K rate up to almost 22% in the second half. Like, he looked like a much better pitcher in the second half of the season. And, you know, he'll be 43 next year, so who knows if it's worth it. But if he can do a team-friendly deal and help out, I'm all aboard that train. And his brother has to stay away. All right, 71 through 75, ADP 276 to 281. So literally everybody was picked in this range. Casey Mize finished 48th in the position. Nick Martinez, 93rd. Chris Bubich, 33rd. Kumar Rocker, 205. And Luis Severino, 152. So Mize and Bubich run away with this category.
Mize and Bubich run away with the category, and Bubich did it in pretty much 4.5 months. It got real rough for Bubich, like 2 or 3 starts before he got hurt. So that undid a lot of good, but still ended up with a 2.55 ERA, 1.18 WHIP. Like, that's really good. So kudos for Chris Bubich owners. We'll see about next season. Never returned after the shoulder, so that could be tough. I want to talk Casey Mize.
Yeah,
that was one of my biggest late starting pitching targets, and did quite well, pretty much in line with his kind of underlying indicators. Really good control, missed enough bats to kind of make it work, but a 3.87 ERA, 1.27 WHIP, 139 Ks for where you drafted Mize. Like, that's you get a top 50 starting pitcher and you took him 71st. I think that's pretty solid. And who knows, there could be another step forward there. The guy's still only 28 and had missed a ton of time due to injury. So you like that. That I will say, did get a little lucky on the win front. Did have 14 wins. So we talked about how kind of sparse win totals were on the previous episode. I think we said 9 starting pitchers in all of baseball had 15 or more wins. So Casey Mize was technically tied for 10th in major leagues in wins. Don't know if that repeats, but I was very happy with the Mize call there this preseason.
Yeah, it's very strong. And it was one that you had to be patient with because, like in July, a 6.32 ERA, in August, a 5.81, because he started out really good. It's like, okay, this is where we're going. And then, is he going the McKenzie Gore route? Like, are we doing this? I was great in September, 3.49 ERA. And what's more impressive to me is, like, the ratios are what they are. But you mentioned the young pitcher with talent. The skills look good. He up to a 28% K rate in September with 24.5% K to walk in September, his best of the entire season. So he showed some market improvements. And I believe he was a pitch mix guy we talked about on a show just off the top of my head. But love seeing a young arm, to your point, that has missed a lot of time, finally getting his innings up, struggled, stuck out there to get his innings to continue to build up, and actually showed improvements as the season went along. That was good to see with Mize, to your point of we could see another step here. Like, that's really, really strong to see from a 28-year-old. All right, 76 through 80, because I got nothing else in this range unless you do.
I mean, still licking my Kumar Rocker wounds. I kind of liked him.
I still did, rough, but the Rangers didn't, because he went to AAA and just kind of, I don't know if he was really hurt. He was just pushed off the roster, essentially. Yeah. It was weird.
Pushed off his rocker.
There you go.
I mean, it's like one really good pitch, really good slider, but like, you need something else in the big leagues, and Rocker got ate up. I can't blame Texas on this one. That was for as good of a call, I think, as Mize and Bubich were, Kumar Rocker was undid plenty of that.
Yes. All right, 76 through 80, ADP 281 to 292. So top 80 pitchers all within the top 300. So halfway through your draft, 20 rounds into 15, 80 starting pitchers off the board. Keep that in mind. David Peterson finished 128. I thought that would have been higher. Clark Schmidt finished 69th. Michael Wacha, 70th. Mitch Keller, 118. Max Meyer, 171. So I'm going to say this much. All things considered, this range wasn't that bad compared to other ranges we've been in.
Yeah, this wasn't like horrible. Because I agree, Peterson, I feel like pitched better than his 128th ranking, and Clark Schmidt was honestly pretty damn good, although only for a half season of starts, only through 14 starts with a 3.32 ERA, 109 WHIP. But still, I mean, at the end of the day, no top 50 pitchers out of this group either. Like, it's the theme of the episode. Like, if you waited on starting pitching and kind of waited, you're not going to wait this long to start filling out your rotation, but you probably cut a lot of these guys that you waited on in 200 plus, because I mean, it's just another group where they just, I don't know, didn't do a whole lot. Like, I guess Michael Wacha finished 70th.
Yep.
Just doing Michael Wacha things. Like, you would just hold him in your rotation and just hope you catch the good side of a 3.86 ERA, 1.22 WHIP. But, like, I don't know, nothing special there. I feel like Peterson collapsed down the stretch. I could be misremembering that, though.
I wanted to mention Mitch Keller real quick, just because the 118 finish is not ideal. 79th pitcher off the board. But you're seeing 419, 126. I just want to bring up with Mitch Keller, like, if you just want consistency in a 15, 176 innings, 178, 194, 159. So at least like 160 innings, but the last few years, pretty spot on. Last year, 419 ERA, 425, 421, 391. So four straight reasonable seasons, like better than a quality start. Quality starts 450. That's what I'm just in my brain telling myself. The whip's where he gets you. 126, 130, 125, 140. But people know I like my whip, so we make that work. Bottom line is he's a guy that's going to accumulate, because we saw 150 Ks this year, 166, 210 over the last 3 years. Ratios, you know, if he can keep the whip around 125 like he did this year, you can live with that. He's basically a quality start guy with accumulating strikeouts. I'm babbling, but as you get late in drafts, Mitch Keller is boring. Like, people just want to, like, hate him because he's on the Pirates and he don't do a ton. But dude's 29. He's been in the bigs for quite a while because he was a quote-unquote, like, top prospect. I don't see why. Like, he's three straight years of at least 31 starts, four straight at 29 or more. Like, this guy should at least get – he's kind of like a poor man's Michael – like, well, little worse ratios than Walker. But you know what I'm trying to say? Boring, but just accumulates for you in a 15.
I guess. I mean –
You like love accumulating pitchers.
I like boring hitters more than I like boring pitchers. Accumulate.
Luis Castillo's boring,
but he like accumulates decent stats. I mean, Mitch Keller accumulated a 4.19 ERA and a 1.26 WHIP. Like, that's not
Luis Castillo goes 120 picks ahead of him.
I mean, you're not going to sit here and say Keller's on par with Castillo.
No, I'm talking about boring.
Well, yeah, but I like the Castillo boring more than Mitch Keller boring. I mean, Mitch Keller boring is like staring at a wall in a library somewhere.
There's 20 pitchers on this side of the board. He's ninth.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I do think, I mean, I will say Mitch Keller probably better in my universe than yours, in a 15-teamer than a...
Oh, 100%. He's a 15-teamer.
In a 12.
12, but like, sucks. Yeah.
Well, okay.
In a 12, he's a streamer.
But that, I mean, you can't like suck in a 12 and then like be good in a 15. I'm not saying
Michael Wacha does it all the time.
I mean, Wacha finished 70th. I don't know, dude. Whatever. These guys all suck.
I'm trying to put lipstick on a pig. In the end, it's still a pig, but we're trying to do something here.
Going back to David, let's switch the subject. Going back to David Peterson. I did mention that Peterson might have faded down the stretch. Ezra here in the chat says Peterson 6.50 ERA in August and a 9+ in September. So that certainly did affect David Peterson's year-end ranking, probably something to the tune of like we thought David Peterson was better than he actually was, because if you started Peterson over those last 2 months, like Ezra says, that actually crushed you, especially in head-to-head leagues.
And Peterson was always that kind of guy that if he's not walking guys, he's going to give you a nice start. So kind of what people would say about him, not always the case, but decent strikeout guy. Just got to control the walks. He usually puts together a pretty nice start. So like the upside with Peterson, but yes, he's much better than Mitch Keller. I'll tell you that much.
Dude, if we end
same
up.
Same amount of strikeouts as Mitch Keller, by the way.
Okay.
And worse ratios.
I can't wait till like a Mitch Keller debate at first pitch at like 2 a.m.
No, I won't be up at 2 a.m. I'm old.
That's not
maybe good. Saturday.
Yeah, maybe Saturday.
Maybe.
I don't know. Same old story with Keller. I'm kind of done with the guy.
Yeah, just remember some quote unquote smart people looking at you, Ben Tidd, Nick Pollock, Eno Saris, all those good people would compared Hunter Brown to Mitch Keller last season. So, yeah.
Which I'm not super high on Hunter Brown next year, but that's a separate
AL Cy Young finalist, Hunter Brown. Yes.
Yes, he was very good in 25 for sure.
All right, let's talk about or anything else on this board before we talk breakouts who were very good in 25 as well.
Yeah, I mean, sorry, folks. That was a little bit of a slog in terms of actual players and how they were. Like, looking at this even more, my biggest takeaway is try and round out most of your rotation before this 200. Like, yeah, take a couple stabs because if these guys don't work out, you cut them and churn and move on. But this whole I can grab a bunch of starting pitching late thing. In 2025 at least it that was not the case at all.
Yep, completely agree. All right, let's go to the breakouts, Ryan. And this is littered with guys that you like here. So we'll start with the first one, a guy that you were the leader of his fan club a couple seasons ago, and then you left him on the curb so he could enjoy a renaissance in Baltimore. What do you got on our number 15th pitcher?
Oh, Trevor Rogers?
Yes.
Man, I don't know. This is what makes projecting starting pitching so just fascinating and as much of an art as it is a science, in my opinion. Like, Trevor Rogers burned the hell out of me in 2022, coming off that excellent, pretty much rookie season back in 21. Pretty much left for dead, right after the Marlins trade, and like everyone, ourselves included, clowning on, you know, Stowers and Norby for Rogers, and it's like, oh, the O's cannot fix Trevor Rogers. And like, yes, Trevor Rogers did not deserve a 1.81 ERA, a 0.9 WHIP. Those are unbelievable numbers, but velocity came, I won't say all the way back, but it was up to 93. It was as low as 91.5 back in 2024, so that was nice to see. Strikeout rate way back up to 24%, K minus walk to 17%. Again, not eye-popping numbers, but you tack on a really good stretch of good luck with Trevor Rogers, and that's how you get to a 1.81 ERA. And this is someone who I remember you laughing at me in a Fab show halfway through the season, bringing up Trevor Rogers. This was someone that did not even cost you much in Fab to add. And if you did so, like that second half that you got with Rogers, I believe was a top two starting pitcher
winner
per Fangraphs. Yeah, in the second half is league winning type stuff.
Yep, he was my first pick when we restarted the meatball draft. So, yep, Trevor Rogers, good in my book, for sure. I'm going to give you the floor again, because this is a guy that you had tons of shares of. Matthew Boyd finished 17th on the player.
Oh.
He stumbled towards the end, but I think he hit a wall. What do you got on Boyd, who we'll talk about Saturday on the pitcher panel, because do we believe he can do it again?
Right. I don't want to spoil your thoughts here, but I did write up Boyd for as high as I was on Boyd entering 2025. I think I'm just the opposite for 2026. I feel like this was a little bit of a good call for some of the first half. But yeah, hit that wall in the second half, was pretty much on rosterable last month plus of the season. And I don't know, man, you take a look at the overall skills. Again, I don't want to talk too much about 26, especially with the panel this weekend, but I don't want to pat myself too much on the back for Matthew Boyd. I think this was a pretty lucky season, but hey, whatever. We play the categories that we're given. ERA, WHIP, wins. Like, you get it with Matthew Boyd, or you got it with Matthew Boyd in 25. Don't know if it'll come back, but hell of a season for Matthew Boyd where you took him.
No doubt about it. Andrew Abbott finished 23rd at the position. He's just a guy that's always a problem for me. We looked at his if you look at, you know, home road splits, actually better at home than on the road, which is crazy to think about. Second half, he did stumble a little more than the first half. But a guy that's a heavy fly ball pitcher, to watch his numbers, literally just doesn't give up home runs, which is mind-boggling to me. And one of the things that really stood out, we saw the 2.87 ERA this year after 3.72 and 3.87 the previous two seasons. and it went in line with the Sierra 4.2, 4.7, 8.4, 3.3. So it's still his best Sierra. Now, given Sierra minus ERA probably wasn't his best Sierra, but it was like he's been this to me. I just look at it like he's the same pitcher that he's been all three seasons, and I still can't believe it.
I mean, he fell back to earth in the second half, right? It was a 1.79 ERA in the first, 3.87 in the second. The thing I will say about Andrew Abbott, I need to look into this a little bit more in the offseason, but this came up. Brian Rudd called this out in the forecaster last week. Led all qualified pitchers in pop-up rate and infield fly ball rate. So, yes, a very elevated fly ball rate, but if they are pop-ups, those are automatic outs. How sticky is infield fly ball rate year to year? I don't think it's that sticky, but Andrew Abbott was top 15 back in 2024 among pitchers with his number of innings in infield fly ball rate. So he's been among the leaders in 2 years in a row in pop-up rate, and that's something that's not going to show up in your Sierra, XFIP, whatever. But those are pretty much as sure thing of an out as a strikeout is. And so that's something where I want to look into Abbott a little bit more and just see, like, is this something where kind of your typical skills aren't going to give Andrew Abbott credit for something that he can do that not many others can do.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. Cade Horton finished 24th on the season. He's a Rookie of the Year finalist in the National League, and he is the king of first half, second half splits here. 4.45 ERA in the first half, 1.03 ERA in the second half. Absolutely filthy stuff there. Now, to be fair, he also had a 17% K to walk in the second half compared to 10.2, and it was largely due to a pitch mix change for Cade Horton, which was great to see. So, yeah, it's one of those where it's a young pitcher working on things, maybe figuring things out at the big league level. Very, very strong. Like, outside of Trevor Rogers, Horton might have been the next best second half pickup you could find.
I think they were 1-2, 2-1 second half in the Fangraphs player writer starting pitcher, Trevor Rogers and Cade Horton. It's funny, for as much like lore as Jake Arrieta's epic second half run for the Cubs like 10 years ago was, Cade Horton actually beat it. I think that's the year the Cubs won the World Series, if I remember correctly. So that probably adds to the lore a bit. But yeah, you said a 1.03 ERA in the second half.
Like, that's insane.
That's crazy. And I feel like Rogers was a universal free agent and cheap. Horton was probably drafted late, but even in 12, so he probably got him pretty cheap. And God, that worked out. And did pitch better in the second half, to your point. Not quite 1.03 ERA. No one does that, but did take a little bit of a step forward in the second half.
Yep, the improvements were definitely there, which is always a plus in our books. You got Merrill Kelly finished 25th in the position. I don't have a lot there. It's just, we've seen Kelly do this before where he just puts together a decent season and you're sitting there going, all right, can he do it again next year? And yeah, I can never really tell, but maybe he improved. What do you got on Merrill Kelly?
Just never doubt in old. Just never doubt in old. We're good.
Back to the boring. Okay, gotcha.
We're good. Good boring. Not bad boring. Good boring.
Not Mitch Keller boring. Got it.
Not Mitch Keller.
Noah Cameron. He had a big year. Finished 31st at the position. Kept getting stuck in the rotation due to so many injuries. Like, Bewich went down. And every time it seemed like Cameron was leaving the rotation, someone would get hurt in Kansas City. He's also a guy that outproduced his ERA versus Sierra conversation. But you look underneath the hood for Cameron, and it's not overly impressive, but it's also one of those where you're like, okay, I can kind of see where this could work, if that makes sense. I don't want to go too deep into the woods on the camera. I wrote about this one also, but I left it going, okay, I guess what he did was not that crazy.
Yeah, I think both things can be true. Like, Noah Cameron held his own for sure. Wasn't 2.99 ERA good for sure. But if you can stick at a 4-ish ERA, which I think is probably where Noah Cameron will, it's probably his true skill level. The park always helps in Kansas City. But I don't know, pitcher over his head. But again, doesn't really matter. You did well if you took Noah Cameron. I think going forward, just looking at the strikeouts and some of the whiffs and walk numbers and that sort of thing. This has kind of regression written all over it. Regress to what? Maybe a 4-ish ERA, something like that. So someone who's useful, but not as elite as he was in 2025.
And then we got Randy Suarez finishing 32nd at the position. had a run of just outstanding starts and kind of petered out towards the end, but not a bad year from Ranger.
Yeah, what? Because I had a bunch of Ranger Suarez. I feel like he was really good, and 32 seemed a little low, but I think he did. Well, yeah. The innings weren't 157 innings. That'll ding you a little bit, and then let's see,
a couple of starts.
Yeah, July, August, September all had ERA over four in each of those months. So typical Ranger, gonna have your good runs and then back starts barking.
Back starts barking. Same, bro. Same.
Exactly.
All right. Anything else before the listener questions? Got a couple.
No. So I mean, some decent breakouts, but again, like. Dude, the first half of the starting pitching was so much like last episode was so much more impressive than even the next 40 plus breakouts. Like it, I don't know, wasn't close.
Like, I don't want to do a show on the next 40, but I'm kind of curious, like, were there at least better pitchers there than there were in this range to like live off of? Probably not.
Let's not do our first pitch live show on starting pitchers 81 through 120.
No, that's only if we're first pitch after dark. Yeah. Requires a shot every time someone says over or underachieved. All right, listener questions here. Sean Shard in the chat here. Which of Gavin Williams, Luzardo, and Lodolo will take the next step forward this season into a top 15 to 20 starting pitcher? Williams, Luzardo, Lodolo.
I would say, and my opinion's different than most on Gavin Williams, but I would say Luzardo has a pretty decent chance. Lodolo not too far behind him to stay healthy. Gavin Williams, I'm still not sold until I see a better walk rate.
Yeah, I'm team Luzardo as well, but I am a Williams believer. So I like all three of these guys. If you could somehow, like if you're in an auction, I wouldn't mind walking away with all three of them personally. But if I have to pick one, I pick Luzardo. Big Luzardo, I'm biased on that one, but I'm a believer at the same time.
I need to concoct some type of Gavin Williams beer bet this offseason. It's brewing somewhere. We'll figure it out.
We will give you time. You're still in H forecaster mode. Give you some time to dig in and go, Bubba's an idiot. Let's do this one. You'll find it. Mailman Mike says, similar question. Who from this board has another level in them? Well, most of them had no level in them, so I'm hoping there's some levels to be had.
Damn. Another level in him. It's a really good question. I mean, I'd go back to Lodolo, but that's repeating myself. I'll say Casey Mize. I just don't know how much of a step that level would be, but I think Casey Mize can at least hold his own as a top 40 pitcher without having to do too much more than what we saw from Mize in 2025.
I think the two that stand out would be Casey Mize and Shane Boz. Those would be the two where...
Yeah, Boz is a really good call. Yeah.
I said those two are the two that stand out as, you know, they're not green really on this board, but you could see them really popping come next season.
Agreed. Good call on Boz.
BP says, can Mackenzie Gore get those first two columns at least close to green?
Mackenzie Gore, where's he at again? There he is, 183. Yeah, those red columns are 4.17 ERA, 1.35 WHIP. I mean, you're the Gore guy. You're more qualified to answer this, but no, I don't think he can.
No,
he hasn't shown the ability to yet.
Until he can pitch six solid months, there's zero chance that takes place right now.
Yeah.
Then Ross has a question here. We kind of hinted at earlier. Feels like many of our projections of pitcher injury risk in 2025 turned out to be inaccurate. Perceived high-risk guys like DeGrom, Wu, and Crochet pitched full seasons, while perceived workhorses like Burns, Kirby, and Gilbert got hurt. Do you think as an injury, we have been overconfident in our ability to project pitcher injury risk, or was this a case of 1 year doesn't make a trend?
I think we have become, and maybe speaking for myself, but overconfident in how good we are at projecting injuries and innings for pitchers. And I need to lean more on actual true skills and let the innings kind of fall where they may within reason. I mean, there's certain guys where like, if you're hurt and you don't come back for a season or by the end of the season, I'm still going to ding you for that. But dinging guys for not throwing over 100 innings or whatever, if they're currently healthy, they can roll with it and go and just trust the skills.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Like we talk about it all the time, especially the Captain Hindsight arguments is, well, should I take more chances? Should I not take more chances? There's those kind of, you know, debates we'll have every offseason, I guess. In the end, I feel like more often than not, the guys you think are quote-unquote safe usually are pretty good. And there's a reason they're quote-unquote safe. They've done it more than 1 year. Let's put it that way. Like when we talked the Burns, the Kirby's, like that was a track record of 5-6 seasons for some of those guys. Like, okay, stuff happens. That's right. Jose Barrios, boring as heck, used to be a workhorse too. Like these are just guys you count on to make things happen and see where it goes. So yeah, I think it's just more of a little thing like that, but I wouldn't read too much into it, let's put it that way.
Yeah, agreed.
All right, well, we're going to wrap it up there, my friend. yeah. Another episode.
Good call.
Another episode in the books. We'll see you in Arizona in less than 24 hours, I guess. And, yeah, on that note, make sure you follow Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. I'm at BD Intrick. This was Bubba the Bloom episode 291. Catch y'all next time.
Safe travels and best of luck.